Hi, birth workers. This one's for you. In an ideal world, VBAC parents would be treated just like any other birthing parents. In today's world, most medical providers sadly don't fully support VBAC parents. However, 90% of parents with a prior cesarean are good candidates to attempt a VBAC. This is why we have created the Advanced VBAC Doula Certification Program. In this doula course, we share evidence-based data for you to educate your clients, teach you the tools on helping them how to process past fears and trauma, or helping them decide if VBAC is even right for them. You will feel better prepared to support them during this beautiful experience. All VBAC certified doulas are listed on our website so parents know who you are. To learn more, go to thevbaclink.com.
Hey, hey, everybody. Guess what? We have our friend Lauren and her 11-day-old baby. Is that 11 days old. You guys, I actually didn't even know that this baby existed until we popped up on the Zoom and she was holding this precious little newborn and she was like, surprise, I had another baby. So she will be sharing her two VBAC, so two VBAC. And something kind of unique about Lauren is that she has a special scar, a special J scar, correct?
Yep.
Yes. So that happened in her first C-section. So if you are listening and you have a special scar or have been told you have a special scar, this is definitely an episode that you're going to want to put on probably repeat and save, because I know that there are so many people out there that are told they have a special scar and they should never or can never be back again. I don't know, we're not even getting into the story quite yet, Lauren, but did you have any flack with that? Did anyone talk about your special scar at all?
Yes. And advocating for the VBAC is probably like the overarching theme of my VBAC, because I really had to go to bat for myself for that without switching providers.
Yeah. Hey, and that's, yeah, we know that's so common, right? We see it a lot in our community, just in general, just trying to get a VBAC, let alone a VBAC with a special scar. So we are going to get into her story, but I have a review and I didn't even know that this was a review. It was left in a Baby Bump Canada group on Reddit, actually. And so that was kind of fun to find. And it's really nice. So it says, seriously, I'm addicted. I find them so healing. I had an unplanned and very much unwanted C-section, and I have been unknowingly carrying around all of these emotions and trauma about it since. I thought I was empowered going into my first birth, but I wasn't strong enough to stop the medical staff with all their interventions. Don't get me wrong. I believe interventions are necessary in some instances, but looking back with what I know now, I realize those interventions were put in place to make it easier on those involved in delivering my baby. Anyways, I won't get into all of that here, maybe in a separate post. Point of my post is checking out the VBAC Link podcast. I listen to them all day now while caring for my babe. They also have a course you can take focusing on preparing for VBACs. Even if you just like birth stories, they have CBAC stories, I believe, as well. On the podcast, a guest also pointed out that what do you want for a VBAC birth? Peace, redemption, etc. She talked about how you can still feel those things if you need a cesarean. I love that point of view right there, that you can still have peace and redemption even if you have a scheduled C-section or if your VBAC ends in a cesarean. Says another mom pointed out when she was feeling hesitant about saying okay to a C-section, her midwife said, you have permission to get a C-section. Not in a way like a midwife was literally giving her permission, but telling this mom C-section is okay and you shouldn't feel like having one is wrong. My babe is 8.5 months, and we aren't going to try for a baby until they're about 18 to 24 months, mostly to increase my chances of VBAC. But I really love these podcasts. And then she says, okay, I'll stop raving now. And I love that. And in her title is, if you're considering a VBAC, I highly recommend the VBAC link. So thank you so much to is this like I don't actually know what your name is, Cata Super Awesome on this Baby Bump Canada group. Just thank you so much for your review. As always, these reviews brighten our day here at the VBAC Link, but most importantly, they help other women of strength find these stories, like what we're going to be sharing today with Lauren's story. They help people feel empowered and educated and motivated, and even first-time moms. They are really, truly helping people learn how to avoid unnecessary cesareans. I truly believe that from the bottom of my heart.
Hi, my name is Megan. Welcome to the VBAC Link podcast. I am a VBAC after two C-section mama, a wife, doula, and VBAC educator. This podcast was created to hold space for those wanting to know their options for birth after cesarean. It is a space where you will likely find yourself getting better educated, relate to stories like your own, and finding the inspiration to help you have a better birth experience. Although we will be sharing stories related to cesarean and VBAC, this podcast is for anyone and everyone who wants to receive evidence-based information and learn how to avoid unnecessary or undesired cesareans. The purpose of this podcast is to educate and inform. It is not meant to replace advice from any other medical professional. Hey everyone, this is Megan. Preparing for my VBA2C was pretty lonely at times. This is why I, along with Julie, created a Facebook community for all the parents preparing for their VBACs. You can find the link to the community in the episode notes today, or head over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link community. This is our safe space to share our stories, tips, and advice on how to achieve a VBAC and ask each other questions. Just remember, studies show 60-80% of people who attempt a VBAC will be successful. We're here for each other on this journey. To join, go over to facebook.com and search the VBAC Link community and start feeling the love and support today.
Okay, Lauren, as you're rocking your sweet precious babe, I would love to turn the time over to you to share your stories.
Awesome. Thank you. It's so nice to be here finally.
Oh
I'm
my
so
gosh.
excited because this podcast truly is the reason I had my VBAC. So I am kind of weirdly unique in that I didn't really feel like I had like any mothering instincts. And my husband and I had been married for 6.5 years before we decided to get pregnant. Because I always swore off children. I said, it's not for me. I'm never going to have children. I want to travel and I want to do all these things. And children are for other people. Like, I can't imagine myself as a mom. And my husband kind of always said, well, let's wait till we're 30, because we got married really young. And he's like, let's just wait till we're 30 and then revisit the discussion. And so I always find it kind of nice when I hear stories about women that feel similarly to the way I did, because it's so relatable and I feel like we're very few and far between. And that's another reason I wanted to share my story, because I know there's other women out there like me. And so anyway, it just so happened that at this time, my sister was pregnant, my brother was pregnant, my husband's brother was pregnant. And we were like, we're almost 30. We've waited a long time. And if we're going to have kids, like, we might as well have a kid when he or she's going to have all these cousins. And so my husband was like, okay, let's start trying. And I'm like, great, I'm going to give it 2 months. And if we don't get pregnant, we're not going forward with this. Like, I'm going to say I tried, and then I can tell everyone I tried and it didn't work. Well, God has a sense of humor, because 2 weeks later, I had a positive pregnancy test.
2 weeks later,
Yes.
so you were already pregnant when you were having
Well,
this
I was
conversation.
taking birth control and I was like literally multiple days into the pack, and I just threw it in the trash and was like, let's just see what happens. And I guess
Oh
when
my.
you do that, you can get pregnant. Like, I don't know, I didn't really have a cycle. So I got pregnant. And
Gosh.
I was so naive about how it all worked. And I'm like, okay, the test is positive, I'm pregnant. Like, it is what it is. Like, I'm very much pregnant. And I had no doubts. I had no worry about miscarriage, nothing, because I had a positive pregnancy test. And that's sort of how I went through my whole pregnancy. Kind of disconnected, very naive, a little bit in denial that I was actually pregnant all the way up until the end. I read one book and it was called The Girlfriend's Guide to Pregnancy. And it's this really sarcastic, kind of funny book. She's very flippant about pregnancy, very straightforward, kind of my sense of humor. And it, I liked it because I felt the same way. I wasn't like mushy, emotional. Like there was no, I had no connection to the pregnancy. I just, I am pregnant. That's a fact. So anyway, towards, I want to say at 26 weeks, my doctor was like, you know, I kind of think he's breech. And I was like, okay, I knew what breech was, but I'm like, okay, what does that mean? And she's like, well, I would start doing, you know, some sitting babies exercises and let's just keep an eye on it. And I was going to a chiropractor this whole time. And this is kind of important for people to know. So I was going to a chiropractor before I even got pregnant regularly. So this chiropractor was seeing me. And so I told her, I said, the baby's breech. Can you help me flip him? Like, can we do some body work? So I continued to see her. I don't know if it was once or twice a week, but it was often. And 36 weeks rolls around and I'm seeing the midwife in the practice and she is not finding the heartbeat like where it should be. And she finds it up higher and she goes, Lauren, I think your baby is still breech. And I'm like, there's no way. I've been seeing a chiropractor, you know, I've been doing body work and stuff. And she's like, well, why don't you go see the chiropractor that our practice recommends? So I'm like, okay. So I go, I call this chiropractor on the phone and I leave her a message. And I'm like, I've been seeing another chiropractor, but my baby's breech. And she immediately called me right back. And she's like, well, what has the chiropractor been doing? And I'm like, it feels like a normal adjustment, like nothing different from before I was pregnant. And she's like, so you've been like on your side and she's been kind of like twisting your back and your pelvis away from each other. You know how they do that, those kinds of adjustments. And I said, yes. And she's like, oh my gosh. And she's like, how soon can you come see me? So I started seeing her and my OB actually also recommended moxibustion. She got me set up with an acupuncturist in the area, which I thought was really cool. I mean, that she was like, some people say they swear by this. So you need to start doing more spinning babies. I want you to go to acupuncture. And so then I saw this chiropractor and she was like, that what that chiropractor is doing to you is not pregnancy safe. And like, it's, she's not Webster certified and you needed to be seeing a Webster certified chiropractor. So that's one of my regrets because I feel like had I known, obviously that, you know, I can't say I blame her 100%. I was also working out a ton because I'm like, I don't want this pregnancy to change my body and I'm going to be skinny and whatever, you know, that's all I cared about. So I'm sure I was holding my abdominal muscles way too tight too. And I'm sure I contributed to it as well, but just knowing that that's probably a major contributor to, you know, what ended up happening, you know, to this day kind of irritates me. But anyway, he never flipped. He was solidly in my rib cage, never moved. I mean, I would push on his head and he would not even budge an inch. So my doctor was kind of like, you know, I would normally recommend an ECV, but he seems very wedged in your rib cage. He's stargazing, which means like his head is tilted up, which now like his chin's pointed up. Yeah. And she said, you have like pretty low, like you're on the low end of normal for amniotic fluid. So she's like, you have these three strikes against you basically, and we can try it if you want to try it, but I'm going to say it's probably not going to work. So I kind of had to wrestle with that. And I ended up calling my husband's aunt, who is a labor and delivery nurse of 30 years. And I asked her for her opinion. I'm like, have you ever been in on an ECV? Tell me about it. And naively, I went with her advice. She said, if your doctor is not confident, then that means it's not going to work. She goes, I've seen so many births. I think every baby should be delivered via C-section because birth is dangerous.
Whoa.
And it's scary. And I'm like, okay. Like, I'm just going to move forward with the C-section. Like, I'm so glad I talked to you. So, we scheduled the C-section and you know what? It ended up being, it really wasn't that big of a deal. My friend's husband was actually my anesthesiologist. My doctor was there. It was happy. It was like a very pleasant, I had gone to dinner with my parents and in-laws the night before. Like, it was just, if you could plan the perfect C-section, it was the perfect C-section. I just talked to my friend's husband the whole time. Again, not connected to this pregnancy at all. very much like, okay, a baby's going to come out. What's this going to be like? And I remember the doctor held him up over the curtain and I made eye contact with him and I was like, oh my gosh, I'm a mom. And the nurse was like, do you want to do skin to skin? And I was like, what's that? Sure. Is yeah. Is going to breastfeed? I'm like, I think so. Sure. You know, very, very naive. And what ended up happening was the recovery was just really tough. So the surgery was great, but I did not expect the recovery to be so tough because I feel like the way people speak of C-sections is so casual. Oh, just have a C-section, or I had C-sections for all my babies. It's no big deal. It's a cakewalk. It's not, you know, and so that's the mindset I went into it with. And same with my husband, because I reassured him. I'm like, it's no big deal. Like, we're just going with the flow. And no, it's awful. It's major surgery. And I am allergic to, I think a lot of people are, but the Duramorph that they put in a spinal. And so I had the most severe, horrible itching for 24 hours. To the point where they basically overdosed me on Benadryl because I could not cope and my vitals were like crashing. I was barely having any respirations. They had to like shake me awake and like put cold washcloths on my head and like, they were like, hello, you know, because I was having such a hard time with the itching. And not only that, but the pain, you know, it's painful. So in my surgery, backing up a little bit, the doctor said, she goes, wow, he's really wedged in there and he's a lot bigger than I expected. She said, I thought he was going to be like maybe 7.5, 7.25 pounds. And she goes, he tore your incision coming out because he was so big. And so she's like, you have a J incision now. So your incision now tears, it tears. Well, your incision goes horizontal and then vertically up. And so she said, unfortunately, that means you'll never be able to have a VBAC. You're just going to be a C-section mama. And I was kind of, I was just lying there like, whatever, like you're asking me what skin to skin is and breastfeeding and no vaginal births. Like it was just a lot of information to kind of process and take in and make decisions about and stuff like that. And I'm just like, whatever. And he ended up being 9 pounds. So, you know, he was a good sized baby. So anyway, that was my C-section experience. And I know I'm probably one of the lucky few that could say that their C-section was so peaceful, really no trauma from it. And I just thought, you know, I'm fine with that. I watched my sister have a failed colac and it looked kind of traumatizing and she was still traumatized from it. And it was just a couple months before my C-section. And so I'm like, it's fine. Like I'll just be a C-section mom, but that recovery was terrible. So I'll have one more baby and that's it. I'm not going to have any more kids. I don't want to experience that again. So that was May of 2019. So fast forward to COVID time. So we were thinking about getting pregnant before my son turned one, but COVID hits. So we're like, let's just give it a couple months, kind of see what shakes out with this pandemic. And, you know, the world sort of stopped and I'm in real estate. So for a while we weren't allowed to show any property or do anything. So I just was sitting at home doing nothing. And I remember one night I was just sitting there doing a puzzle, bored as heck. And I'm like, I'm going to listen to a podcast while I do this. And my phone suggested the birth hour. I hope I'm allowed to like,
I love the birth hour. Yes. Okay.
So I was scrolling through the episodes and there was one on VBAC. I'm like, okay, I'm going to listen to this. And the interviewee mentioned the VBAC link. And so I was like, okay, I should check that podcast out. But I sort of was like, why am I even listening to this? Like, this is so not my wheelhouse, like childbirth. I still didn't care about it, you know? But listening to those podcasts, it was like, it opened a whole new world for me. And I'm so glad I found it all before I got pregnant. So I started listening to all those podcasts. And then I found, I think through your podcast, I don't think it was the birth hour, someone mentioned Dr. Stu. And so I started listening to his podcast. And man, that guy's a spitfire. And he had so much great information. So I listened to every podcast pretty much that he had done. And especially the ones on VBAC, where because he talks about VBAC a lot and just how it really shouldn't be a big deal or shouldn't make you high risk and all that. And at the time, he was still graciously reviewing people's op reports for them. And, you know, now he doesn't do that. I think you have to pay for it. But I reached out to him and I emailed him my op report. And I just said, if you could look at this, like my provider had told me I wasn't a VBAC candidate, but I want your opinion. And And he got right back to me and he's like, there's no reason you can't have a VBAC. Like, this should not, the scar is really not that big of a deal. Yes, it's a special scar, but you know, it shouldn't take away from your opportunity to TOLAC. So I ended up getting pregnant in the fall of 2020 and I went to my first appointment and my OB was like, so what do you want to do for your birth this time? And I'm like, did she forget what she told me? She must have forgotten, but I'm like, I want a VBAC. And she's like, okay, well, I'll give you my VBAC consent form and we can talk about it as your pregnancy progresses. And I'm like, okay, cool. And then I saw her again at 12 weeks and she's like, you know, I'm having some hesitations because you had such a big baby and your scar is not normal. So, you know, I think we need to talk about this a little bit more, but let's not worry about it now. We can put it off and worry about it later. And I'm like, hey, you know, I was so bummed because I love my OB. Funny story. I met my OB when I was worked for a home design company called Pottery Barn. And I met her one day just like helping her buy pillows. Okay. And I'm like, what do you do for work? She's like, I am an OB. And I'm like, cool. I need an OB. I had just moved to the area. And so had she. And so I just started seeing her and we kind of just, I think I was one of her first patients. So like, she knew me, you know, it wasn't like she was this random provider I only saw once a year. But we would always pick up where we left off and we had a good relationship. So I really did not want to change providers. And so and I don't want this to sound like I was being manipulative, but I was like, I'm just going to really lean into this good relationship we have and just try to like win her over. So as the pregnancy progressed, let's see, the next appointment, I think I saw a midwife and then I talked to the midwife about the VBAC and my OB's opinion about it. And she's like, you know, I've seen a lot of women VBAC with a jade scar at my old practice. And she's like, I don't think it's that big of a deal, but maybe I'll talk to the doctor for you and hopefully we can figure this out. And I was like, okay, you know, and I want to say I went to my 20 week appointment. And they told me, okay, your baby is gigantic.
Oh, geez.
And they said he is going to be between 9 and 10 pounds. But they said, because he was measuring 2 weeks ahead.
Uh-huh.
And they said, but the other concern we have is that you have a marginal cord insertion. And that could make for a small baby. And I'm like, okay, so is he big or is he small? Because
yeah.
Clearly that marginal cord insertion, like maybe it's helping him not be 12 pounds. Like what are you trying to tell me? And they're like, either way, we suggest that you come back at 32 weeks. Like we have concerns about his size. He might be a tiny peanut. He might be enormous. And I'm like, I think I'm good. Thanks. Like, no, thank you. And thanks to you guys. You know, I had heard so many stories and you guys pushed advocation so much that I'm like, this doesn't add up. You know, you can't tell me he's too big and he's too small. I think I'm just going to go with like bundle height and palpation and just, you know, if my doctor has a concern, you know, I'll come back. So I never scheduled that growth scan. I was very protective of this pregnancy. Like I didn't want any outside opinions. I was so afraid that if I went and had this growth scan, I would be pushed into a C-section. I wanted an unmedicated birth. You know, I was kind of terrified of the hospital. I was listening to so many podcasts all day, every day. It was like an obsession. And something I told Megan before we were recording is I felt like I was almost idolizing it a little bit, the VBAC. Mm-hmm. Like it was all I could think about. It was all I could talk about. And it was sort of like became this unhealthy obsession. But right around like 25, 26 weeks, I decided to hire a doula and move forward with basically like I was just going to move forward with the VBAC. It didn't matter to me what the doctor said. And right around that time, I was having some hesitations, just getting that pushback from my doctor and knowing he was big, like I started to let the fear creep in. And I told my husband, I said, you know what, maybe we should just do a C-section. Like, I think I'm overanalyzing this too much. Like, I'm just going to push aside all this knowledge and all this research I've done because clearly I'm obsessed and like, this is consuming me.
Yeah.
Let's
Which
just
it's
have
easy
a C-section.
To do. Just to let you know, really? It is easy to let it consume you.
It totally is. And I think that we have to take a step back sometimes and like mm-hmm. come back to reality and just sort of if you let the information override your instincts, which I think it's really easy to do, I think you can get too wound up and too set on something that might not be meant for you. Mm-hmm. And so, speaking of instincts, that night, I still remember I had told my husband, I think I'm just going to have a C-section. I went to bed and I had a dream, and I was in the hospital in the dream, and I was holding my baby, and my dad walks in. And I have a really great relationship with my parents, but like, especially my dad, I love my dad. He comes into the room and he's like, how'd it go? You know, he was meeting the baby for the first time, and I burst into tears in the dream. And I said, Dad, I didn't even give myself the opportunity to be back. I just went in for a C-section, and I just have so much regret about it. Mm. And what could have happened if I had tried to have this be back.
I just gave me the chills.
Yes. It was so weird. I've never really had a dream like that before. And I woke up and I was like, there's my answer. I have to move forward with this. And I just, having that dream gave me this piece of like, there's the instinct I need to follow. Like, yes, I have all this information that's consuming me, but it was like, keep going. And so I hired a doula, which I found through the VBAC Link Facebook page. I just put it out there, like, does anyone know a doula in my area? And Julie actually commented, and it happened to be one of her really good friends had just moved back to my area. And so I called her, and turned out we had mutual friends, and we connected really fast. And I think I was like I said, it was about 26 weeks. And so then I go to my OB again, and we had more of like a powwow, like a back and forth on the VBAC option. And she was kind of like, I'm just kind of worried about it. And a C-section is not that big of a deal. We could just tie your tubes. Like, then you won't have pelvic floor issues. False. and I said, well, you know, I got a second opinion from another doctor. And I didn't say it was Dr. Stu. I wasn't like, yeah. Some guy with a podcast in LA. But I said, I got a second opinion, and I feel like I just want the opportunity. And we didn't really land on anything solid, but she got up to leave the room, and she got to the door, and she turned around, and she came back over to me, and she gave me this big hug, and she said, I don't want to disappoint you. I want you to be happy, but let's keep talking about this. So I was like, okay. And that kind of gave me a little bit of reassurance that, you know, I was leaning into that sort of like relationship I had built with her over the years, because it had been like 6 or 7 years of seeing her. But I had also been like, I'd bring her flowers, or I just like would always try to talk to her about her life and just make a social connection with someone. Because if you let your doctor sort of like intimidate you just from the standpoint of being a stranger, I feel like that can really change the course of your care. But if you really try to get to know people, and that's not necessarily a manipulative thing, it's just like, I think it's important. Mm-hmm. And it should be important in your relationships with your doctor. And if you don't feel like you can connect with them, like, there's issue number one. But I really felt like I could connect with her, and I kind of leaned into that. And I have like a little cookie business on the side, and I would bring her cookies. She loved my cookies. Like, we just had some other things to talk about other than my healthcare. And I feel like it kind of set this foundation of like a mutual respect a little bit. I mean, what doctor comes over and gives you a hug and tells you like, I want you to love your birth, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So fast forward again, I see her again the next time. And she said, look, I brought your case to my team. And because we support moms who've had two C-sections, we felt like your risk is similar to theirs, and that it shouldn't risk you out of a TOLAC. And so I'm going to support you if this is what you want. And I had given her this analogy that I think it was Julie's analogy. And she said, like, if you needed heart surgery and you were told that you had a 98% chance of success, because I think my risk of rupture was like 2% or maybe a little bit lower, maybe 1.5%. And I'm like, you know, I told her this. I was like, if you told me I needed heart surgery and I had a 98 or 99% chance of success, we would do it. There would be no question. Yeah. And I have this 1% risk of rupture. I'm coming to the hospital. Like, you know, what gives? Like, I should at least be able to try. And the problem is, I'm sure some people are like, why didn't you just switch providers? We have 3 hospitals in my area. One is 20 minutes from me and 2 are an hour away. And one of them that is an hour away is the only one I can be back at, is the only one that doesn't have a VBAC stand. And there's like maybe a handful of providers that deliver there. So I was, and I knew my provider was VBAC supportive, sort of. She kind of had like the most experience of a lot of the providers around me. So that's why I didn't switch. I had very minimal options for care. And I'm like, I couldn't go to LA, or I couldn't go somewhere further away. It would be like a four hour drive in either way. We're mm-hmm. kind of like an isolated area.
Mm-hmm.
So I felt like, okay, that was a huge win. Like, we're set to go. And I remember I told Katrina was so happy for me, my doula, and I just soldiered on. So I started taking Dr. Christopher's birth prep at 36 weeks. I was doing my dates, and I was really busy in real estate. So that's part of my story. I was so busy working super hard, and I was getting to the end of my pregnancy. And at 38 weeks, I went in and I had had clients lined up, like showings coming up. And I was like, I can't have a baby anytime soon, because I was talking to my provider about it. And I'm like, maybe at 40 weeks, we can talk about like a membrane sweep or something. But I have so much on my plate, I can't have a baby this week. My husband is a firefighter, and he had like his shift that he was going to be taking off, like starting like maybe the following week. And I'm like, he's not even going to be home. He's going to be gone like most of this week. Like, this is a horrible week to have a baby. But I let her check my cervix, because I'm like, I want to see if my dates and my birth prep are doing anything. Because, you know, at the same time, I still have this fear that what if I do all this work and then my body just, I don't even dilate.
Right.
It was kind of what happened with my sister. So I had that fear in the back of my mind. So she checks me, and she's like, you're like 2 centimeters dilated, 50% of face. Like, you're going to make it to your due date. No problem. And she's like, we're not even going to talk about an induction, like, till maybe 41 weeks. She's like, I'm just not worried about it. He doesn't feel that big to me. Like, he doesn't feel small. He doesn't feel too big. Like, he feels like a great size. And I said, I know. And I said, I feel really confident that he's going to be like 8 pounds, 2 ounces. I spoke that out. I just said, that's my gut feeling. And I said, I just have so much confidence and peace about this birth. Like, I just know it's going to work out. So I go on my merry little way from that appointment, and I'm walking around. We had gone down to the beach, and we're walking around, and I'm like, man, I'm so crampy. Like, that, for some reason, that check made me so, so crampy. And this was 38 weeks exactly. So we go back home, and I have like prodromal labor that night, and I'm telling Katrina about it. She's like, you know, I bet the check just kind of like irritated your uterus. And the next day I start having like some bloody discharge, and I'm like, what is this? Like, what does this mean? I'm asking Katrina. She's like, you know, it could mean nothing. It could mean labor's coming soon. We'll just have to see. And I hadn't slept the whole night before. She's like, you need to get good night's sleep. Well, I had to show property all day. And I met these clients for the first time. I showed like 4 or 5 houses to them. And meanwhile, I'm like, gosh, I'm just so sore and tired and crampy. And I told them, I said to my clients, I said, you know, I'm very obviously pregnant, clearly, but my due date's not till the end of the month. This was like June 10th, and my due date was June 23rd. So it's like, we have time. If you guys need to see houses, it shouldn't be a big deal. I don't want my pregnancy to scare you away. So that night I get home and I'm like, I'm going to bed. It's 8 o'clock. I'm going to bed. I'm going to take Benadryl and I'm going to have the best night's sleep. They call me at 9 p.m. and they're like, Lauren, we saw this house online. It's brand new to the market. We have to see it. And they lived a couple hours away. So I'm like, I'll go and I'll FaceTime you from the house. I'll go tomorrow. This is, you know, tomorrow being June 11th. And I'm like, we'll make it happen. I promise I will get you a showing on this house. And I text Katrina and I'm like, oh my gosh, I feel so crampy and so sore and like something might be going on, but I have to work tomorrow. And so I'll just keep you posted, kind of thing. And so I wake up the next morning, it's now June 11th, and I lose my mucus plug like immediately, first thing. And there was some blood, like it was basically bloody show. So I told Katrina and she's like, okay, just keep me posted. Like, I kind of have a feeling he's going to come this weekend. This is a Friday. And I'm like, well, he can't because my husband works Saturday, Sunday, Monday. And I'm like, I don't have time to have a baby. So I go to the showing. I'm finally alone, like without my toddler, without my husband. I'm driving in the car and I'm like, man, like my lower back kind of hurts and it's just coming and going, but nothing to write home about, just like a little bit of cramping. And of course, I never went into labor with my first, so I did not know what to expect. So I get to the showing, and this house has like a really steep staircase, and I'm FaceTiming my clients, and I'm going up the stairs, and I'm thinking to myself, this is probably like noon. Man, it's really hard to get up these stairs. Like, why do I feel so funny? And I finish up the showing, and they're like, we want the house. This is the house for us. Like, I get back in my car, and I'm like getting all their information, talking to the other agent. I start the offer, and I'm like, I'm just going to drive home and get in my bed because I don't really feel good. And I'm just going to write this offer from my bed, and everything will be fine. So I get home, and I tell my husband, it's probably like 2:30 at this point. I'm like, I'm just going to sit in her bed and get this offer sent off. And mind you, I had a work event, like a big awards event that night for my whole office. And we were going to have to leave at 4 p.m. And my in-laws were going to come get my son and take him to sleep over. And it's 2:30. Okay. I'm writing this offer, and I'm just like, I really don't feel good. I really don't feel good. And my partner calls me, and I tell her, I'm like, listen, I don't know if I'm in labor, but I don't feel well. Like, maybe I have a stomach bug. So I'm going to give you my clients. I'm going to write this offer. I'm going to give you my client's information, and I want you to, you know, kind of take over for me a little bit, because they know I'm really pregnant, but like, this could just be a sickness. But either way, if something happens, I want them to have the best care and like be taken care of, because we're going to send this offer off. So I send the offer off, and it's like 3:30 at this point. I close my computer, and I'm waiting for them to DocuSign. And I text my husband, and I'm like, there's no way I'm going tonight. I said, I don't feel well. Something's up, and I'm not sure what. And he didn't see my text for a little while. He comes in the room at 4, and he starts to talk to me, and I just like literally fall to the ground with my first contraction. And I'm in active labor. Don't know it yet, but I'm in active labor. And I'm just like, it feels like there's a wave crashing in my body. That was the best way I could describe it. I'm like, I feel this building and like an ebb and flow, but it reminded me of like playing in the waves as a kid, because I grew up in Orange County and at the beach, and like just that feeling of like the waves hitting you when you're playing in the surf. And I'm like, this is really intense. Like, what is going on? And I'm like, I'm certain it's a stomach bug. And I told him, I said, or something is just like, I have gas or something. And I was like, I'm just going to give myself an enema and this will all go away. So I did that. And sitting down on the toilet, I was like, oh my gosh, like it made everything so much more intense. So I texted Katrina. I was like, something's going on. I'm not really sure what it is. She's like, well, why don't you try timing some contractions for me and let me know? So I like crawl into my closet, because I can hear my son and my husband like getting ready. And like my son was like 2. So of course, 2-year-olds are not always behaving. So I can like hear them interacting. I crawl into my closet, and I'm lying on the floor in the dark, and the contractions are 3.5 to 4 minutes apart, lasting a minute. And I'm like, I'm still just pretty sure this is like a stomach thing that's happening every 3 to 4 minutes. And I call Katrina, and I'm like, I don't know. I think I'm in labor, but you know, this is the length of my contractions. It's probably just prodromal, because I had so much prodromal labor. And she's like, it doesn't really sound like prodromal labor, but I'll let you kind of just figure it out. You let me know when you're ready for support. Make sure you're eating something. Have you eaten anything today? No. Have you had any water? Not really. Okay, please eat something. Please drink some water and keep me posted. And she goes, can you talk through the contractions? And I said, I can cry. And she's like, okay.
I'm coming.
She's like, well, I'm ready, like, to go as soon as you tell me. And then next thing I know, literally, like, this is probably an hour later. So 4 o'clock, I have my first contraction. Now it's 5 o'clock. And I'm like, the contractions are 3 minutes apart and lasting a minute. And so I said, maybe you should come over. Like, I think my husband is getting like a little nervous, but we're so naive. Like, we don't really know what labor feels like and what's going on. And he was kind of like, if we're not going to the event, like, why don't we just keep August, our son, he's like, why don't we just keep him home? And like, I'll just make him dinner and I'm going to make you dinner. And he starts prepping dinner. And I'm like, I don't think either of us really know what's going on. You know, of course, Katrina knew what was going on and probably thought I was a crazy person, but I was very much in denial. So we text her to come over, And she gets there and I'm lying in my bed and she's like, okay, yeah, they're coming like 2.5, 3 minutes apart. Like, if you're ready to go to the hospital, I'm ready to go with you. And I'm mooing through these contractions, like vocalizing everything. And I'm like, it just feels good to vocalize. And I just really keep having to use the bathroom and it's probably just my stomach. And she's like, no. And so she's telling my husband, I can hear her outside the bathroom door. She's like, she kind of sounds fishy, but I think we should go. Like, she's really vocalizing a lot. And that usually means it's like pretty substantial active labor. And so meanwhile, all I can think about is I got to get this offer in for my clients. And I'm waiting on DocuSign. I keep checking my email. Finally, it comes through. This is like 6 o'clock now, maybe 6:30. I see it come in and I send it off and I'm standing at my kitchen counter, like with my computer open, mooing, doing this freaking offer. And I go to like cross my legs, you know, as I'm like leaning over and I'm like, I can't cross my legs, Katrina. I feel like my bones are separating. And she's like, baby's probably descending into your pelvis. Like, I think we should get going if you're okay with going. And we have a 45 to an hour drive, just kind of depending on traffic and the time of day. And it's a Friday night. So thankfully where I live, there's not a ton of traffic, but we get in the car and she's following us and we get to the hospital and it's probably like maybe 7:15, 7:30, something like that. And I'm telling my husband as I'm mooing through these contractions, this really isn't that bad. Like I told him, I said, if this is labor, like it's intense. And it feels like there's an earthquake in my body, but I would not tell you that I'm in any pain right now. And he's like, okay, whatever you say, lady. And we ended up having to walk like all the way across the whole hospital parking lot to the ER because the regular entrance was closed. And as soon as we walk into the hospital, it's like the hormones change, like the adrenaline kicks in. I start feeling some pain. I start feeling a little bit panicky and it starts getting harder to cope through these contractions. And I'm like, on the floor of the triage room, crying into a trash can, and everyone's staring at me. And Katrina's like, people need to stop staring. She was like trying to defend me while my husband's like answering all their dumb questions, like, what's your favorite color? What city was your mom born in? You know, all the dumb questions they ask you. And they're like, let's just put you in a wheelchair and get you up there. And I'm like, I can't sit. Because if I sit, anytime I tried to sit, it was like the contractions were then like a minute apart and they were so intense. So they get me up there and I was, again, so protective of this birth and outside like interventions. I just was like, everything is evil. Like cervical checks are evil. The epidural is evil. Like everything's going to make me have a C-section. And I was like, I don't want to know how dilated I am. I don't want anyone in this room to know except the nurse. That's who's allowed to know how dilated I am. So she checks me and then the doctor comes in and he's like, and it was the hospitalist, and he is of all the providers in my area, it was like miraculous that I got this hospitalist because he is so much experienced. He is so calm, so kind, so supportive. And he just said, you know, hi Lauren, I'm Dr. So-and-so and, you're in labor, happy laboring. No concerns about my toe lack, nothing. Didn't even bring it up. Didn't ask to check, nothing. Just happy laboring. And he left the room. And I'm like, okay, so clearly I'm in active labor. And so then they were getting the tub ready because my room had a tub. And as we're waiting for it to warm up, I'm like sitting on the ball and I'm having all this bloody show. And the nurse has to check me again right before I get in the tub. So unknowingly, I had been 5 centimeters when we arrived. I was 7 now when I got in the tub an hour later. I get in the tub and I wouldn't say it provided me any relief. Honestly, I was so in my head and not necessarily in pain, just so mentally unaware of everything going on, you know, in labor land, but also very overwhelmed by the intensity of it. I told Katrina, I'm like, George Washington could have been sitting in the corner of the room watching me labor. I would not have known. I barely opened my eyes, but I had a nurse that was there sitting with us because I had to have a one-on-one nurse for being high risk and I had to have continuous fetal monitoring. So because I was in the water, she needed to like sit there and make sure the monitors didn't move. Couldn't have told you what she looked like. Nothing, never spoke to her. I was just in another world. And I think I maybe was in the tub for like 30 minutes to an hour. It's probably like 9 or 10 o'clock by, you know, I can't even remember the timeline of it, but it wasn't that long of a labor. My water breaks and I start grunting. So they're like, let's get you out of the tub. Let's get you out of the tub. And I think I was maybe 9 centimeters at this point.
Mm-hmm.
We arrived at 7:30. This is probably 10 PM, something like that. So I'm like, okay, I'm just going to lean over the back of this bed and just moo and make noises. I think me being who I am and not like super emotional, I'm making jokes about how I sound. I'm like, you guys, I sound like Dory and Finding Nemo. Like, I'm so embarrassed. Like, please don't look at my butthole. Like, I'm like butt naked. Like, I'm just making all these jokes and coping, you know, I would say pretty well in terms of pain, just very overwhelmed by the intensity of it. And they come in and check me and they're like, you're okay, you're complete. This is like at 11 p.m. maybe, or 10:30, something like that. She's like, you have a little bit of a cervical lip. It was a provider I hadn't met before from my OB's office. But, you know, they're like, we'll just kind of let you do your thing. Like, you sound pushy, so, but please don't push because you have a lip. Let's just let him descend. And I kept like feeling inside of myself. I could feel his head. I could feel it coming down. But I'm like, I want it to be over. Like, I want it to be over. And I'm still kind of in denial about this whole thing the whole time. Like, are we sure it's not poop? Like, I know there's a baby coming out. Once my water broke, I was like, okay, I guess I'm having a baby.
Yeah.
That was really, truly the first time that I was like, okay, this is really happening. And so maybe like 30 minutes later, the hospitalist comes, peeks his head in the room. He's like, Lauren, why don't you just try laying on your side? So I tried and it was like too painful. And I flip over on my back and 3 pushes later and he comes flying out. Like, I screamed him out.
Oh my gosh.
And it was super painful. And I was so overwhelmed by how painful it was. And I just screamed like a crazy wild woman. And he's on my chest and he's screaming and I'm like in all this pain. And then she's like, I got to give you lidocaine. You tore a little bit. I'm going to stitch you up. And it was just like all this pain happening, you know, at once. But I was like, I got my V back. Like, that's all that matters. You know, no one touched me and I got my V back and I don't care about anything else. And anyway, it was great. And I would not change it for the world because I never had like a ton of pain. I never really felt like I needed an epidural, but it was a little bit mentally overwhelming.
Mm-hmm, I'm sure.
So anyway, that was my V back, my first V back. And the doctor said, you pushed so primally, like that was the most amazing thing I've ever seen. The hospitalist was like, that was incredible to watch. You are a badass. and I was like, that is such a compliment because I didn't know what I was doing. And, you know, and you're this doctor with all this experience. So anyway, fast forward to my third pregnancy. This is now the summer of 2023. We decide we're going to have one more baby. And I, of course, had no issues with the VBAC this time because I had had a successful TOLAC with my second. And I made it to, let's say, 20 weeks. I had COVID, RSV, and the flu all right around then. And so they were telling me, your baby is measuring totally normal. And I'm like, probably, yeah, because I've been sick as a dog for 6 weeks. But I'm like, maybe I'm going to get this newborn that is a normal, you know, a normal size, because my son was born at 38 and 2, the second one, and he was 8 pounds, 3 ounces. I had told my doctor 8 pounds, 2 ounces was my guess, 1 ounce off. Okay. So I'm like, maybe I'm just going to get a little peanut baby and it's going to be so great. I'll finally have a newborn that fits in a diaper for more than 2 days. And then I hit 33 weeks and I'm like, I got huge. I like exploded inside and I go to my OB and I'm like, I don't feel good. Like, I'm too big. This baby's too big. Something's wrong. And she's like, no, Lauren, I really just think you make big babies. And he just went through a growth spurt. So let's not worry. I'm not going to have you go do an ultrasound or anything like that. Like, if he continues to measure 2 to 3 weeks ahead, because I was measuring 36 weeks at 33 weeks. She's like, then we can talk about it, but I don't want to worry about it. And I'm like, okay, but I'm having all this like round ligament pain, you know, more than I ever did with my others. And prodromal labor was so painful. And I remember telling Katrina, who I hired again, I said, I feel like something's like wrong. Like, there's with my muscles, like I just am so uncomfortable. And, you know, I was like, but I don't want to make any rash decisions based on it, but I might get an epidural if this keeps up because this doesn't feel normal. So she's like, okay, you know, whatever works. And so I get to my 38 week appointment and I'm thinking I'm going to have this baby at 38 weeks, just like I had my second baby, and I had everything ready. Everything was good to go at my house. And then it's just like day by day it ticks on. Baby's not coming. Baby's not coming. I was due April 6th. This is just this year. So 2024. And I get to 38 weeks. I told my doctor, I'm like, just strip my membranes. Like, I don't even care. And she's like, okay, I guess that's what you want. So she did it. Nothing happened. Then 39 weeks rolls around. She strips my membranes again. Nothing really happened. And then the night of Easter, I had this kind of strange experience where I woke up in the middle of the night and I had this contraction that wouldn't end. And I couldn't feel the baby moving and freaked me out. I did everything I could to get him to move. I was in the shower. I was eating. I was drinking. I was doing all these things. And finally, I called Katrina at 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm like, my baby's dead. I'm 100% sure he's gone. What do I do? Mm. You know? And she's like, Lauren, just relax. Like, lie on your side and drink something sweet. And we were ready to go to the hospital. Then I remembered we had a stethoscope. And I got the stethoscope out. And I put it right where I knew his heartbeat was. And I heard his heartbeat. And I burst into tears. It was the first time I've ever cried with any of my babies, even being put on my chest. I just felt this relief because I had so much anxiety about him. Like my size being so big, the pain I was having. I'm like, I just want this baby out. And I've never really felt that way, but I felt this like desperate anxiety. So a couple days pass and I'm now in week 39 and I'm like, my uterus is silent as a little church mouse. Like she's not doing a thing. She's not cramping. She's not contracting. No discharge, nothing. And I'm like, this baby's never going to come. So I tell my doctor at my 39 week appointment, I'm like, if this baby hasn't come by Friday, I'm back here and I want another membrane sweep. And I felt kind of crazy because I'm like, this is like technically an induction, right? Like a natural. Mm-hmm. And I'm intervening. Me who never wanted anyone to touch me. And now I'm like, please touch me and pull this baby out of my body. And so she goes to check me and she's like, Lauren, I kind of think he's coming tonight. Like, your body like contracted around my hand when I tried to sweep you. And she's like, I just wouldn't be surprised. Don't worry. And I'm like, okay, well, you're breaking my water on Monday. So I was 3 to 4 centimeters dilated. And I'm like, we're waiting till Monday, but I want you to break my water because I'm over it. So she's like, that's a good idea. Let's threaten this baby and he'll come right out. This was early in the morning on Friday, the 5th. So anyway, I still had all this anxiety and I just felt like he needed to come out. I couldn't get any peace until I knew he was like alive and happy and healthy and on my chest. So Friday afternoon, I kind of felt crampy just a little bit the whole day. And then at 4:30 p.m., I feel this gush. And I'm like, okay, got my water or did I pee? Because his head kind of felt like it was on my bladder. And I didn't say anything to anyone. Then like 6 o'clock rolls around and I text Katrina. I'm like, listen, I felt a little gush and I keep feeling it. I put a pad on and it doesn't seem to be urine. So I'm not really sure what's happening. And I said, I'm just going to do some mild circuit and I'll update you. 7:30, I'm cleaning my kitchen. All of a sudden I get hit with an active labor contraction. And I'm like, oh, not again. Like I want labor to start normally. So I know what's happening, but no, baby's like, I'm ready. So 7:30, I tell her, I'm like, okay, I'm feeling contractions. I'm getting in the shower to see if they'll stop. It might be prodromal. Let's give it an hour. I'm going to text you, but they're 2.5 minutes apart. And she's like, I'm at dinner. I'm getting boxes. Just let me know. So I was like, okay, it might stop though. So I wouldn't worry about it. And no, it did not stop. She gets to my house at 9 and my car's already running. I'm like, we're going. Like I am mooing through these contractions. I'm going to pop this baby out right now. And I had thankfully put some Chucks pads in the back of my car and I'm on all fours in the back of my car. Mind you, we have to drive an hour to the hospital. I peed all over the Chucks pad, like the baby. I just was like, he's on my body, he's on my bladder. Like, and this is so painful. And I couldn't control anything. And I'm like, is this water? Is this pee? I don't even know like what's happening. And we get to the hospital and he did not come out in the car, thank God. But we had to go through the ER again. And the ER was taking forever. It took him half an hour to get me up to labor and delivery. As I'm actively mooing in front of the hospital, like I was like, I'm not going in because there's a little girl sitting in the waiting room and some convict sitting with a police officer. Oh. I'm like, I'm not having my labor in front of these people. And even the police officer came out and he's like, I don't understand what's taking so long. Like, you're clearly about to have this baby. Like, I will bust open those doors for you and walk you up to L&D myself if that's what it comes to. And finally, they got me up there and I arrived and I told Katrina and my husband, I said, you guys, I'm getting an epidural. I said, I have had so much anxiety and so much pain. This does not feel like my previous labor. Like, this mm-hmm. feels like I'm suffering. And mm-hmm. I said, I just want to smile. I just yeah. want to smile. I want to smile this baby out. So we get up there. I'm 8 centimeters dilated. And this is the part of the story that I just feel like it comes back to advocating for yourself. I go in there and I'm like, I don't care what you need from me. I just know I need an epidural, like, and stat. So the nurses are like scrambling. And then this doctor walks in and I am on all fours on the bed, just staring at the ground, actively transitioning. And I see this doctor walk in, I see his feet and he's got his shoelaces untied and he's like, and immediately I'm just like, no, it's a no. I don't know why. I just was like, ew, your shoes are dirty and they're untied. Like, you seem like a hot mess. I'm already a hot mess. I want someone to come in and just be like, I don't know, clean cut and normal. And he starts asking me all these questions. He's asking me my whole health history, everything about my grandparents, my parents, all this stuff. And I'm in transition. And then he goes, you're aware of the risk of TOLAC, right? And I said, yes. And he goes, that your uterus could burst wide open. And I said, I literally saw red. Okay. I'm in a contraction. And I just screamed like a wild lady. And I was like, dude. And I wanted to add on some expletives and tell him to get out of the room. I just said, dude. And he was like, I'm just saying. And he ended up leaving. And my nurse peeks her head under, like, to come to, I like look over and I see this nurse like peeking her head, like, you know, right into my face. And it's the same nurse that was there with my first VBAC. And she goes, you don't have to accept care from him. And she goes, your doctor is actually the backup on call doctor tonight. And so she goes, if you refuse care, we can call her and she can come in. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is a miracle. So we get the epidural. And I'm like, we got to slow this thing down because I don't want to have this baby and have this crazy man that I cannot stand, like, anywhere near my body parts, anywhere in this room. So we get the epidural and everything kind of slowed down. I labored down. My doctor ended up coming in and she checked me and she was like, your bag is bulging and it feels like rubber. It's so thick. And so she's like, I think that's why he's not coming out. Cause this was like, we got to the hospital like 8:30, no, it was later than that. It was like 9:45 by the time we got into the room, 11 o'clock by the time I got the epidural. And then, and the anesthesiologist was like, you're going to have this baby in 30 minutes. Like, I'm certain of it. But I slow it down. I'm like closing my leg. I'm doing all these things I can to slow it down. So my doctor comes in, she breaks my water and fluid goes everywhere, like floods the floor. She's like, I don't remember any time I've ever seen this much water come out of someone without like polyhydramnios. Like, maybe you had it, I don't know, but this is an insane amount of water. So she breaks my water, and then my epidural was like a pretty low dose because he thought I was having that baby in 30 minutes, and it's now 2:30 in the morning and I haven't had the baby yet. So I get up on my knees and I'm leaning over the back of the bed and I just feel him descending. Then my doctor comes in like an hour later and she's like, let's get this baby out. Like, it was 3:30 in the morning and she's like, let's go, you know? So she feels me. She's like, you're complete. I feel his head right here. You just need to push and you can't feel that his head's right here. And so I just get on my back in lithotomy with a freaking stirrup. And like I said, I would never do with the epidural. I said I would never get. And I pushed him out in 3 pushes and he was 9 pounds, 7 ounces. I am so glad I got that epidural. No regrets there because I mean, that's a really freaking huge baby. And his head was like in the 100th percentile or something, like gigantic. I tore a little bit again, but I feel like the trade-off was this peaceful, happy birth. I was making jokes. I had this nurse that I loved and knew. I had my doctor I loved and knew. I had Katrina and I had my husband. Those were the only people in the room. And we like laughed our way into this birth and like I laughed my baby out basically.
Yeah.
I was making jokes the whole time and I just had this like peaceful experience. And I told my husband, I'm like, I know I railed on the epidural my whole pregnancy and I said I would never get it, but it's a tool. Ultimately, it's a tool. And if you use it wisely, you know, I was very far along. I said, I think like, I don't think it's going to stop my labor. And I felt really confident in my decision. I didn't feel like anything was pushed on me. I made the decision. I'm happy I did it that way. And would I do it again that way? I don't know. I think every birth, you should be open-minded to the possibilities and your needs, and not, I hear so many stories where women are like, and then I guess I just got the epidural. I had to. And I'm like, it's okay. Own that decision.
Yeah.
Like, it's, you're no worse off for getting it. And it doesn't make you any less of a mom or any less of like a good person for getting it. It's okay to not feel every single pain of labor if it's over, you know, clouding your ability to like be in the moment.
Yeah.
And so anyway, that was my second VBAC story. And I'm so, honestly, it was like so redemptive because there was no trauma from the pain of the suffering of like, of having this wild, chaotic primal birth. It was just like peaceful, happy, you know, with all the people. If I could have dreamt up a list of people to be in the room with me, that's who it would have been.
Good. Oh, I love that you pointed that out. Well, I am so happy for you. Congrats again, 11 days ago and right now.
Yes.
And thank you again so much for sharing your story.
Thank you for having me.
Interested in sharing your VBAC? Head over to thevbaclink.com/share to submit your story. For information on all things VBAC, including online and in-person VBAC classes, the VBAC blog, the worldwide database for VBAC doulas, and more, head over to thevbaclink.com. Congratulations on starting your journey of learning and discovery with the VBAC Link.